Kubernetes for humans.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Kubernetes for Humans podcast. Today with me in the show, we have Nilesh. Nilesh, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, it's a pleasure to be on this show. My name is Nilesh, Nilesh Kule. I was born and brought up in this small town called Goa. It's in India, very close to Mumbai. If you happen to go to India, I highly recommend that you visit this place. It's known for its touristic beauty. It was one of the Portuguese colony, and you find a lot of things which are quite different from rest of India, which was a British colony. So our culture, our food is quite different. So I did my schooling, everything in Goa. And then when the time came to start my career, I moved to the Silicon Valley of India, Bangalore. I started my career as a .NET developer, and I worked in Bangalore for a good seven and a half years before moving to Singapore. For last almost 14 years, I've been living in Singapore, and as time went on, I've moved from like a .NET developer to a senior developer, then I performed various roles across my 2 decades of career. I've done architect role, I've done Scrum Master, I've been team head, where I've set up a team for a big department, starting with 3 members and growing all the way to 30 to 40 member team. And in terms of technologies, I've moved from .NET to big data, Java. And then when cloud came along, I was very interested in terms of the scale and the capabilities that cloud has to offer. So then I moved on to cloud engineering as a cloud solution architect, and I've been working on cloud native applications and looking at things like how to make our application scalable, resilient, and really make use of cloud capabilities. That's where I've been working off late, and I was also heading DevOps slash SRE team for a while. That's more or less what my career has been over the last 2 decades.
Okay, like that sounds like you had a lot. So maybe I'll try to ask you like some questions on your like history. First of all, like I wonder, like moving from India, like not technology related, but how was it like moving from India to Singapore? Like how is Singapore? Like maybe share a bit about that, like on a personal level.
Yeah, Singapore has been quite good to me. I've spent almost 14 years in this country. It's been part of my career progression. So I have very fond memories, and I still have very good connect with the Singapore. It's one of the major technological hubs in Asia. Mm-hmm. India anyway is quite big, as you know, and there are a lot of opportunities in India. And when it comes to Singapore, I think what attracts people from India to Singapore is opportunities to work with some of the leading banks, for example. Banking industry and financial services is quite strong here in Singapore. And in terms of innovation as well, Singapore is quite ahead in terms of the other Asian countries when it comes to implementing innovative solutions. So if you are more of a technologist and you like the challenge of being always in the forefront of technology, I think Singapore has a lot to offer.
No, that's cool. Like it looks like, you know, like always in the movies, looks like a really beautiful city state. So it's a mouth travelist. And so now like
organized. One thing you find when you come to Singapore is everything just works.
It sounds nice. Very not like Israel, and I guess India as well, right? Like not the organized places. So let's talk maybe a bit about Kubernetes. Like when were you first introduced to Kubernetes? Like what was the role, position, what did you do, and so on?
Yeah, sure. I started Kubernetes back in 2017. That time it was when I was learning, or I was getting into the DevOps side of things. So I started learning Docker, which was one of the upcoming technology at that point in time. And once you start learning Docker, you need some place where you can deploy your containers. So in fact, I started off with Docker Swarm. That was my first orchestrator that I used. Then for some demos, which I was doing for my public talks, I even remember using Portainer. And that time there was a lot of competition between Docker Swarm and Kubernetes. And at one point, Kubernetes just took over. So that was the time I realized that there was no point spending time, effort, and energy in Docker Swarm, which Docker themselves were almost giving up. So I started moving from Docker Swarm and other technologies to Kubernetes. Since then, I've been working with Kubernetes.
Okay, that's cool. So was it like official side where you worked, or it was more like a pet project? Like where did you really like, when were you introduced to like a really Kubernetes in production state? Like maybe again, like share a bit like the, what was the company doing until then? How was the migration? Maybe let's try and like deep dive a bit about that, because I know that for like, and I know that you're currently in the financial sector, but for like big companies introducing new technology, especially one that has like a lot of caveats such as Kubernetes, can be a bit challenging. So yeah, just share it with us like a bit of like, you know, what happened, why did it happen, and so on.
Sure. When I started, it was more for self-learning. It was one of the technology which everybody was talking about. Any conference you go or any tech talks you went, you always heard people talking about Docker containers, orchestrators, things like that. So that is where my interest in the technology started. So initially, it was more for just keeping myself updated with the technology. And then sometime around 2018, when I was actually leading a DevOps team, that was the time I worked with a production-grade Kubernetes, where our company, which was an insurance company, I was heading the site reliability engineering team there. We were using Azure Kubernetes Service to deploy our applications.
Mm-hmm.
That is where my experience with production-grade Kubernetes came in. And in my current organization, which is a leading bank here in Singapore, we have a mix of workloads which run on VPC as well as Kubernetes. So we have a sort of multi-cloud hybrid cloud kind of environment where we also use Kubernetes to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. And how did like people like got the gist of it? Like I know that learning Kubernetes for the first time can be like a bit challenging. So how was the how was the real like implementation going to maybe like the, not the technical details of like spinning up the clusters, but more around like, did you migrate like existing things into Kubernetes, or everything was like a green ocean? So the goal is mainly, I will say, you know, like I know that a lot of people, especially in the insurance companies and in the fintech sector, only now are doing the migration to Kubernetes, right? Like only now it really became like the standard. So think about like yourself, like a few years ago, what are the most important things that, you know, you wish you knew back then that were hard or that were very good? So
I think in my experience, when you start with Kubernetes, it's sort of easy to get started with hello world kind of applications. You can create, let's say, containerize your application using Docker or whichever container platform or container engine you want to use to create your images, OCI compliant image, and then you deploy it to Kubernetes. That's the happy path scenario, I would say, where most of the times developer find it easier. Then you start exposing it using service. Okay, good. Ingress comes in as a next step. Still good. Then when you start going into advanced use cases where you have to run, let's say, auto scaling, where you have to do stateful processing, where you have to work with like custom resource definition, where you have to do blue-green deployment and those kind of advanced things where you look at, let's say, metrics and you want to scale based on something in your messaging queue. Those kind of scenarios is where you require really a change in the mindset. I would like to share one experience where we used to use this Microsoft Azure as a cloud platform. And I remember one of the, application lead saying, oh, our SRE team can just spin up multiple replicas of our application and everything will be able to handle large scale of large number of replicas.
Yes.
Then if your application is not designed to do that, number of replicas will not help. Let's take an example where you are processing messages from a queue. If your consumer picks all the messages in one batch and you have four replicas which are just staying there idle, it's not the ideal scenario. They are not making the efficient use of your resources. So in my opinion, it's a change in the mindset when you start building applications for cloud, cloud native and Kubernetes, for example, that you have to think about not just how your application behaves, but also the surrounding aspects of that, about like high resiliency and doing things in small batches and being able to support some of these like 12-factor apps or 15-factor apps where you don't scale up, you scale, you know, out. That's the kind of application knowledge, or that's the kind of mindset developers need, and even the operators need to understand this, that just increasing the number of replicas or just increasing the number of servers is not going to help you in this kind of scenarios. The other thing I think which the developers or the leads they need to understand is, when you move to cloud native applications, it's not always about 100% availability, which was the case before. You have to be prepared and you have to build your applications in a way that they can handle failures. Failures are going to happen, but you don't let your application to go down completely. If you're developing microservices, you have to have those patterns which are related to microservices, like having a circuit breaker, having retry mechanism, things like that, which allow your applications to be more resilient and be capable of handling failures. Failures will happen, but your application should be able to manage those in a graceful way. I think those are the kind of mindset changes which are required, which sometimes when people start moving from monolithic applications to microservices or cloud native applications, they find it difficult initially until they come across a problem, and then you explain them that this is how you should handle it. I think that's one of the challenges we have in the industry.
I think, you know, what you're saying is like a lot of really, really good points. And I think not a lot of people really understand that. But I wonder, like, you're talking very much as like, you know, like you are architect, you are DevOps, like, you know what you're talking about, and that's great. But how do you say it? Like, how can I, as like a simple developer, right? Like working in the bank or in a fintech like sector, now know that I need to build my application differently, right? Like, because we're cloud native, like you said, like we should, it's easy to scale out, but not easy to scale up, right? Like, how was the process of like introducing this technology to other like teams? Like, were there teams that worked only on Kubernetes, or did they need to change their applications so it will be more cloud native? Like, I think, by the way, like what we see in our customers a lot of the time is that, you know, they try the naive like lift and shift, like take it from the VMware or like whatever into Kubernetes, and then things doesn't work as expected, right? Like that's life. So how would you suggest, maybe, you know, let's say that our company is migrating to Kubernetes. We already have a lot of VMware or like whatever, like old legacy application. How would you, like, what do you think we should do? Like, only like take one team and take them into Evangelist, or something else? Only new teams should be written? Like, yeah. I'm sorry, like I'm talking a lot. Give your take here on that.
Yeah, in my experience, what we did in the past when we started doing like a cloud migration project is first do a kind of survey and build an inventory of which applications are using what kind of technology stack. And then you look at you know, which application needs to rehost, which needs to be refactored, which needs to be re-architected. And as a first step, you do these sort of trainings for the new teams who are going to be using these new technologies, make them aware of what is coming, what is the change that they have to do. They have to understand it's not just about you know, taking an application and do a lift shift and expect it to work as expected. Like, there are going to be things which we have to understand the impact of those changes. And then when you start actually building or migrating a project, I suggest to choose a small application, which is, let's say, low risk, low key kind of application, so that everybody involved understands the process, right? From, let's say, infrastructure team who is supposed to build the infrastructure, then the application team who is supposed to, let's say, migrate the application, your operators who are going to operate that application. And if you have a DevOps team or SRE team, they also need to understand how to monitor those applications, how to observe those applications. And if something is missing along the way, like if you are migrating a legacy application, it might not have all the traits of observability. That's an opportunity to introduce things like make your application more observable. And once you have that application migrated, then you do like sharing with the rest of the teams to share your lessons learned. What are the challenges? What are the difficulties? What is good? What went well? And that is how you build like a pathway for the subsequent teams to adopt these new tools and technologies.
No, that makes like complete sense. What would you say was the biggest challenge for you guys when you did that migration? What was the biggest thing to overcome?
I think the culture of the organization plays a very, very key role in this case. Because if we talk about DevOps, in many companies, DevOps is just a separate team again. Application team again builds the application and then hands it over to the DevOps team, who is then supposed to do their magic and somehow push the application by building pipelines and things like that. I think that is one area where in terms of collaboration and bringing in that culture change plays a key role, that it's not just the DevOps team who is responsible. It's also, if you really implement DevOps in the right way, you need to have both sides working hand in hand together, the developers as well as the operations people. And I think that's a very important point when people start adopting, let's say, DevOps or platform engineering and things like automation. That collaboration and that change in the mindset is the most important factor, in my opinion, which needs to start right at the beginning.
I think like that makes complete sense. Sometimes it is a bit hard, right? Like it's hard to change the culture of an existing organization. Like sometimes it does take time, but I think you need to start, right? Like if no one will push it, then like the organization will keep like being in its old ways. So maybe now, you know, we talked a bit about the migration, but now let's say I migrated, like what is your current challenges around Kubernetes? Like if you can share, right? Like what are the biggest things that we're just starting 2024 right now? What are the biggest things around Kubernetes that you still feel that are not working as expected or you would love to change or improve?
I think biggest challenge right now with Kubernetes is the whole ecosystem. There are so many options. The whole cloud native landscape, if you just search for cloud native, the page just keeps on growing bigger and bigger. And sometimes as decision makers, it's quite challenging to identify the right tool for the right purpose. So I think as, let's say, architects or as someone who makes those decisions, it's important to understand how certain things work. Say, for example, service mesh is a typical example I take here. There are different providers for service mesh. You have Istio, you have every cloud provider providing their own service mesh. And then
there's like,
How do you choose the right one? And how do you choose the one which is most suited for your business, your application, and your organization? I think that is the biggest challenge right now, because the pace at which new open source projects are coming, or even existing vendors, they are integrating new tools and technologies, especially around Kubernetes ecosystem. That's a big challenge I see at this moment.
So like, how do you solve it, right? Like, you currently work in like a big like bank, right, or financial institute. Like, how do you choose, or like, what do you do? Like, if I look at 2024, like, are you implementing? Like, are you adding like a new service mesh into the stack? Are you exploring new tools? Like, so I agree with you, by the way, like Kubernetes is a very like chaotic environment that keeps on changing. Like, even if you took the right decision, maybe in a year, it's like already obsolete, right? And you should choose like a different system. So how do you guys cope with that? Like, how do you, in particular, you have a high level overview, right? On the market, on the bank, like on everywhere. Like, how do you prioritize, or how do you know what to focus on, right? Like one question, and then like what really to do once like you focus, for example, on service mesh.
Yeah, we use this concept of a technology radar, and this is not just only for Kubernetes, but we use it for all sets of technologies that we use within the organization. this gives us a view of what is currently in use, what we should keep in view, what we should stop using, and then what we should really like look forward to, keep an eye kind of thing. Using this, we try to gauge the trend in which the industry is going and look at the ways in which different projects are progressing. And we try to keep things in a way that they are interoperable. Try not to use some tool or technology which is very vendor specific, so that if you have to choose a different vendor or if you have to switch over to something better in future, the effort is minimal. So try to use something which is based on open technologies and open standards as compared to someone who is doing closed standard kind of technology. That's the way we approach it, by having an internal tech radar. And this is reviewed periodically, like every 6 months we review it to say what we said was good to do last year. Is it still valid? Are we still in the same position, or do we need to change direction and pick something else?
Okay, that's a good answer. So now maybe let me ask you, people don't really see that because we were like in a podcast, but behind you, there's a lot of like MVP, MVP, MVP. So maybe share a bit about like what are all those MVPs stand for?
The MVP stands for Most Valuable Professional. It's a recognition from Microsoft for people who are like industry expert, and they are not Microsoft employees as such. But we evangelize different technologies, and Microsoft recognizes our community contributions, and we are recognized with this Most Valuable Professional Award. I've been lucky to have been awarded this award since 2018. So six or seven times now for Microsoft Azure, for different things that I do around Microsoft Azure. So I do a lot of public speaking in and around Singapore in different conferences. And I usually talk about Azure Kubernetes Service and containerization, things like that. So for that, those contributions, I have been awarded with MVP award.
Ah, super cool.
Also, I have a Docker Captain. If you see, it's a small thing that that again is similar, where Docker recognized my community contribution for the area of containerization. And last year I was awarded Docker Captain.
It's super cool. So maybe now, you know, like maybe, you know, I do love when people also talk about, you know, what they do or like what they love to do. So you talked about like the Microsoft, the fact that you like to talk about Microsoft. Do you have anything planned? Like, is there a blog, a book, or anything else that, you know, you like to promote, like, in the upcoming year? Are you talking in KubeCon or something like that, or Microsoft Days?
I spoke at the Vox Days, the industry event, when it was happening in Singapore. I was a speaker on two occasions. I also speak at the API Days. So I've spoken at API Days Singapore as well as Australia. And KubeCon, I didn't have opportunities so far at KubeCon, but there was recently a Kube Day event which happened. So I've had the opportunity to speak there as well. I think apart from that, what personally I'm closely following is the platform engineering, the website, as well as their different podcasts and their YouTube channel. I think they have quite a good amount of content there. Platform engineering is picking up quite a lot recently, and I'm interested personally in that. So if you ask me what I'm currently looking as a next step, it would be to embark into something related to platform engineering and Gen AI as well, generative AI.
Now that's cool. And I think like platform engineering is like becoming the new DevOps. Like everyone is talking about it. Everyone has to be there. So just like to conclude our podcast, like I always love to ask the people, what is the future having in store? Like, what do you think like Kubernetes in a couple of years, what will be the biggest trend? What is going to be the biggest change? Your prediction on the future.
I think the pace at which Kubernetes has evolved, it's very rapid. When I started Kubernetes, I didn't think it would go so fast. There wasn't such a big ecosystem. But now I think almost all kinds of workload are being run on Kubernetes. So at some point, I wouldn't be surprised if Kubernetes just becomes like part of our operating system, like many of the tools and utilities which are there as part of our normal operating system nowadays. It could be that we have Kubernetes as part of that. And some of these platforms, they evolve into more of a matured way where it just like other application programming interfaces and things like that. Kubernetes is just part and parcel of our life. That's, I think, more or less the possibility we might see in next 5 to 10 years.
Okay, that's a cool prediction. I'll be honest, I also think that like this is where the industry is going for. Like, you know, it's hard to know the future, but I really see it as like, right, like we say it quite a lot, like the new Linux. Like most of the time nowadays, I don't really think about Linux. Like it's something, it's like a base image that I have in my Docker, but most of the time I don't really care. And yeah, I do hope that Kubernetes will arrive to that stage. So I think we're kind of wrapped up. Anything else that you want to say to our audience or like to ever?
It was nice talking to you about all these experiences and my thoughts. Really helpful. I hope the viewers or the people who listen to this podcast find it useful. It was my pleasure talking to you.
Okay, it was a pleasure to me as well. Like super interesting journey and insight. Thanks a lot.